And I will share with you that I am so inspired that we're going to hear today from some incredible speakers about the power of an ability to inspire from all different generations in the workforce and in the communities. So with that, I would like to share with you next, we have an incredible young woman. I shouldn't say age here, right? So I was a little sensitive about the whole age thing, so I shouldn't even talk about age. But I will say that we have an amazing moderator here that I would like to introduce you to. Mickey Agarwal, if you can stand up, say hi. She's gonna be up here in a minute. Is a serial social entrepreneur. She is the founder of the acclaimed farm-to-table alternative pizza concept called Wild in New York City. She has since partnered with Zappos.com CEO Tony Hsieh to open the concept in downtown Las Vegas. Her next undertaking is thanks a high-tech, beautiful underwear solution, which I will show you at the end of the session. So I'll show you that at the end of the session. I'm not going to model those, though, but I will. solution for women during the time of the month. She and her partners teamed up with AfriPads and Uganda to fund several reusable cloth pads for every pair of underwear sold to get millions of girls back in school, which is phenomenal. I never thought I would get up on stage and talk about underwear, but here I am. Agarwal is also a partner in Super Sprouts, a children's media company to get kids to eat more vegetables. Most recently, HarperCollins published her book entitled, well, here's another first for me, Do Cool Shh, with a T at the end, so she could say, okay, on entrepreneurship and lifestyle design. Agarwal is an identical twin, half Japanese, half Indian French Canadian, former professional soccer player, and graduate of Cornell University. So with that, I think we're gonna have an amazing session today, and I thank you for attending. Please make sure that you turn off your cell phones. Okay. Mickey, thank you.
Hi. I need to get, okay. Hi, everybody, how's it going? Welcome to Texas. That's my second time here. I love it. I love Austin. It's the best. Okay, well, let's go first and introduce these beautiful ladies sitting to my right. Colleen Brewer, Debbie Dunman, and
Karen
Reuter. Can you please go ahead and just 1 minute talk a little bit about yourselves and what you're working on?
Okay, I'll go. Can you hear me? Okay, great. I'm Colleen Brewer. I'm the VP of Sales at the Austin American Statesman, which is the newspaper here in town for those of you who aren't here. And I have been in the media business for about 23 years. And most recently, I am very, very passionate and interested in how to connect these generations, as two-thirds of my team is under the age of 30. So how do we mix what their expectations are, what their needs are, with those of us who are not under 30?
Good morning, everybody. I'm Debbie Dunham. I'm Senior Vice President of Americas Services Sales for Cisco Systems. And leading a very large sales organization, I also have a very diverse population and workforce, including recent college hires who come into our college hire program and start in our virtual sales team, all the way through folks who are, like me, have been in the IT industry for over 30 years. Yes, I was 12 when I started. Everybody nod your head. Of course you were, Debbie. And have been doing this for a really long time. And so our customers and our partners at Cisco all reflect multiple generations of people in their workforce. And we think it's really important that our workforce mirror the same so that we can interact and engage with them in the best way possible.
I'm Karen Reuter. I'm a creative director and brand strategist with Cass Collective in Boston, Massachusetts. And I work with venture capital, private equity, and leading corporations to help them leverage design as a strategy. I'm an industrial designer. I grew up wanting to design cars and found my way to the computer industry, and then spent probably the best 13 years of my life as a creative director with Nike in Portland, Oregon. You know, if you work for a brand like Nike, you have to be an 18-year-old football crazy kid. So I'm not that clearly. But I fell in absolute love with Gen Y. So not only as a core consumer, but also managing a group of 70 creatives around the world. So it's a topic that's near and dear to my heart. So I'm excited to talk about it today.
Welcome, ladies. Just to give you a quick background on my latest project. I'm working on a project called Thinks. You'll see a little card on your chairs. So quick show of hands here. How many women have had an accident during their time of the month and have thrown many pairs of underwears away? Okay. Every woman, pretty much. Those who didn't raise their hand definitely had that too. It's cool. I get it. So, you know, the question became like sort of, in this day and age of innovation, in this day and age of high tech, of every app on planet Earth, including Angry Birds, how is it possible that there's no innovation in undergarments for women? Right? Have you thought about that? Like, what we've learned to cope over the many, many years of our existence. And so, over the last 3 years, we basically invented a pair of underwear that's sexy, breathable, washable, but also leak and stain resistant. So you'll never have to worry about staining or leaking through them again. And the second part of it is, has anybody here traveled to the developing world? Okay, cool. So the question is, have you ever asked yourself, like, what do girls use during their time of the month when they're sort of in their little villages, right? And so I met a young girl named Amale on a weekday and asked her, why aren't you in school? And she said, it's my week of shame. And I said, your week of shame? What are you talking about? She told me that she, along with, you know, all of her friends, and I came to find out 67 million girls in Africa and 100 million girls around the world drop out of school every single year because of something as natural as their periods. They start by missing 1 week of school every single month, and they use things like sticks, leaves, mud, rags. No one's talking about it. It's a taboo subject. And they miss a week of school and eventually get so far behind, they drop out. And so to help girls like Amale and all these millions of women around the world, we partnered up with an organization called AfroPads to produce washable, reusable cloth pads for girls at an affordable price. So for every pair of underwear that we sell here, we fund the production of 7 washable, reusable cloth pads. And we launched our Kickstarter campaign back in February, and we're getting our first collection next week after 3 years. So really excited. Yeah, thank you. So I would love to start by asking you a question about purpose. So in your companies, how, you know, the millennials, the Gen Y, Gen X, they see so much, they're being sort of, there's so much noise in the world, they're being advertised to, they're being marketed to by every sort of which way. How do you guys sort of see purpose coming to the play of your companies and how that's going to affect sort of the decision-making of these millennials potentially joining your company?
You know, I think from my point of view, it's really my role to have a deep understanding of that generation, right? And understanding their hearts and minds and then speaking to them on their terms. So I think that, you know, what worked before is really not working now, but there is an authenticity, and I even want to say a predictability around this generation. It's just we as a boomer or a Gen X, we have to take the time to really deeply understand what those differences are. And I think that's the purpose that you bring, right? It's the same as you connect to your core consumer, right? You want to understand their hearts and minds and then not really make assumptions. You know, be curious, engage in conversations, you know, get to know them almost as you would your sweet spot consumer. That's what I think.
You know, and I also think it's not just about when you were born, it's about what's influenced you, because that's really what shapes all of us, right? And to understand those influences and how they're different across various generational groups. And, you know, at Cisco, our vision is to help the world with the way that they work, live, learn, and play. And I think that's very appealing no matter what generation you're from. And so what we really try to do is understand the influences and what shapes each of us as we, you know, show up at the workforce every day. And then find a way to help people marry that with the vision that we've got about helping the world work, live, play, and learn. And we found that no matter what generation you're from, everybody can connect to that and find a lot of purpose in all or one of those areas. And so it's really enabled us to have a very different conversation with people across all the different eras.
I would agree with all of that. I do think that this younger generation is much more interested in community and a reason to exist and a reason to work in an organization than those of us who just were so happy to have a job when we got out of college. Their expectations are that they're going to be fed, their interests are going to be met, and so giving them a purpose beyond just coming in and doing a hard day's work and getting a paycheck, is really critical. If they are into supporting causes, or they're into community events, or having a softball team at work, whatever it is their driver, you got to find a way to make sure that you appreciate that it's more than just doing work and getting paid for it.
I think we also have to understand their metabolism, right? Because of right. all the influences. At Nike, we used to like to say they're an innovation generation on a fashion metabolism. So it's, you know, it really is, it is that, right? So if it's what's new to them, you know, sometimes we think we have to innovate incredibly, but sometimes what's new is what they didn't see last week. And so I think we have to understand that change in metabolism, which is quite different.
Previous generations.
Sure. Yeah.
So just in your experience, what have you observed as some of the core differences between sort of the boomers, Gen X, Gen Y, and millennials across the board in all departments?
I think there's differences in what they value to some of the comments that Karen and...
We're
trying.
Yeah.
Is that better, you guys?
Yes.
Is that better? Okay.
So I think
some of them were already mentioned, but I think it's what's the leadership style that appeals to them, right? I'm a baby boomer, right? So we're more used to kind of tops-down leadership style. I think that, you know, you kind of get to Gen X, it's more consensus. Mm-hmm. And then you get to a millennial, and it's actually more about, to the points Colleen made, right? They're looking for leaders that inspire them and that connect to the things that are important to them. So I think I see a big difference in kind of from a leadership standpoint. And the kind of leaders they want to both interact with and also follow in any kind of corporation.
So what does that mean, leadership, as far as, like, what kind of leadership for millennials?
So, you know, I think they're looking for people that connect to the things that are important to them and can help them understand and bridge that to what's important to them, to the points Colleen shared, and then how does that connect to what they do every day? So I think from the folks that I've interacted with in my organization, they need to understand how what they come and do every single day feeds or nourishes that set of priorities that really are their value systems that they've been influenced and shaped by.
And I think in leadership, they want to participate. They're not just a group that said, because you said so, like the boomers were. The boss man said, go, you went.
Right.
And these folks want to participate. They want to understand why. Why is really, really important. They also have high expectations for flexibility. Mm-hmm. Coming in at 8 and leaving at 5 doesn't work for them. They're interested in, you know, I want to work out, I want to walk my dog, I want to do whatever I do. And so if I don't get to work till 9:15 and I bust it till 7:30, that needs to be okay with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so leadership needs to, they're looking for leaders who get their lifestyle, get what's important to them, and again, that they are there for more than just a day of work.
And we need them. You know, like my generation, I'm a boomer. I need that.
Yeah.
I need the millennials to tell me, the Gen Y generation, really to help show me the way. So, you know, I think a lot about this sort of path through corporate America that baby boomers did, you know, sort of this led to this, led to that. And, you know, one of the keys for me at Nike was to include, you know, this younger generation in sessions that normally you would hold off until somebody had a lot of experience. And I think also it's up to us to teach. You know, I always say it's like share our gifts freely, because, you know, we're not gonna make it if we wait till they have all the ducks in the row and they've learned everything we've learned in the same order as we've learned it. We need to jumble up our model of process and success in order to be competitive today. There's a lot of them.
And what are the things you think you can learn from each other? The biggest things you think you can learn from each other?
Well,
and how are you learning from each other?
So what I do is a regular series of either coffee chats or skip level meetings, and so it's me and then the folks that do the work every day, right? And there's nobody else is in the room. There's no topic that's verboten. It's very much an open dialogue, and I ask them, tell me what we're doing wrong. Give me examples. Tell me what you need me to fix. Tell me how we could make your job more valuable, your work more rewarding, your environment a place that you're comfortable in. And I find they're very open and very free with the input if somebody just asks.
Right.
And so I try to find spaces and forums and venues where I can provide the environment where they'll come tell me. And to your point, Karen, I totally agree. So any large project, any strategic decision you're trying to make, include a broad mix of people with a diverse background and set of experiences. Because lots of times, if you've got a room full of baby boomers, everybody go, yep, that's what we're going to go do. And then you bring in some people from different eras, and they will say, you guys, that's not going to work. Yeah. And they're the only person in the room many times that will raise their hand and say, okay, y'all are crazy. That's not going to work.
Right.
So they challenge us, and I love that.
And I think the challenge, they'll bring up ideas that we've never done that before, and we don't know what that looks like, and we can't call it that because it's not in the manual. And you got to be, if you're going to ask them, you got to be willing to deliver.
Ready to roll.
You can't say, thanks for sharing. No, we're not doing that because we don't do it that way.
Yeah.
You have to be open-minded. And I think, I mean, clearly you're all here because it's not as easy as we're sounding like it is. It is hard. And moving organizations that are established and are founded on core values and core, you know, rules, doesn't work for this generation. And if you have that inflexibility in your workplace, it's going to be hard to keep them. I've read a lot about this, and one of the things I know is that these folks typically stay in a job 18 to 24 months. In 18 to 24 months, they're pissed off they weren't promoted, they don't make more money, they aren't sitting at the table, and you aren't listening to them. So if you want to keep them, and we have to Karen's point, they're taking over, we have to keep them, and we have to keep them motivated, you got to be willing to change.
You know, I think, too, that the baby boomer, you guys can hear me now, right? The baby boomers and Gen Y are much more similar than they are different. You know, I think the challenges, too, are with Gen X in the workplace, right? So there weren't quite as many of Gen X. And so I think you've got, and, you know, I hate to make stereotypes because I think it's sort of dangerous. But if you look at the baby boomers as sort of being narcissistic, right? It was all about us, always. You know, Gen X, a bit more pessimistic, questioning. And Gen Y is very optimistic. You know, even with the difficult circumstances, they're very optimistic. I think more time needs to be spent with the relationship between Gen X, who is now in the C-suite, the 40-plus, because that's where a lot of the opportunity for getting better is, you know.
So your concept of what you said earlier, just ask, the concept of just asking. I think a lot about, like, the millennials who come into your workplace within 3 months, are like, where's my raise? What am I working on next? Like, I feel like the boomers have learned to really, you know, put in their time and earned their stripes, whereas the younger generation are very much more like, okay, I did this. Like, where's my raise? What do I get? What's my, you know, promotion? How do you manage that? How do you manage the kids sort of asking for, you know, more than, you know, what you've asked for, you know?
Well, at first, I give them a lot of credit. I mean,
yeah.
why didn't I do that?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way,
I
waited way too long to do that myself.
Yeah.
I'm like, should have done that 5 years ago, right? So first of all, I give them a lot of kudos for doing it in the first place. Second of all, I think this gets back to one of Karen's points. Part of the role that we have is we do have to help mentor, and we do have to help coach. And so there's a balance conversation, right? So there's a conversation around balance because, you know, we all wish there were some things different in corporate America, but there is still, in a lot of, I would say, a large majority of corporations, still the concept of things do take time.
Right.
There are some things that we need to see exhibited or done or delivered to kind of get all of the things that they want. But I think there's other ways that you can engage them.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, come in this meeting where we're going to have a bunch of senior leaders and we want you to represent our customer or our partner or, you know, challenge us or tell us what you think. So give them other opportunities to engage in places where they might normally not be inserted. But also I think we have the responsibility to help teach maybe a little balance.
Right.
And I think there are things you can do that keep them motivated that don't change career paths. For example, play music in the middle of the day, or we have Banana Pudding Thursday, where we bring a big trough of banana pudding, and the line and the chanting is happening 20 minutes before 4 o'clock, because that's when they know the banana pudding comes out. And so there are things you can do that don't cost money, that aren't about career pathing and jumping over steps and not following the experience level expectations that keep them motivated and say, this is a good place to be, and I'm gonna hang around to see what comes next.
And remember the things that irked us, right? As women, you know, when you heard back in the day, or we've never done it like that. I mean, that's like cross-generationally nerving, you know? So it's like, how do you, you know, not repeat the same mistakes?
Yeah. So in lieu of banana pudding.
Chocolate.
Culture. Chocolate banana pudding, excuse me. Culture. Let's talk about culture. So talking about how you can get your people chanting for banana pudding on Thursdays, how do you sort of build that culture? My partner for my restaurant, Tony Shea, CEO of Zappos, is really, you know, are you guys familiar sort of with their culture and how strong, you know,
about
selling happiness, delivering happiness is sort of their thing. What is your, you know, how do you guys sort of build culture in your organizations that have been established for a very long time, or changing culture somehow?
Yeah, so at the newspaper, and we're 140 years old. We do things the same way that we did 140 years ago, I'm sure of it. So so attracting talent, especially young talent, has been difficult, because when you say a newspaper, you don't always think of positive things. You might think about dying, my future would be short, my career path is a dead end, all those kinds of things. The good news is that we have lots of other ways to share our news with and our content with audiences. Most of them are digital. So we always start there. But I think from a cultural standpoint, it's your people. I mean, my folks were saying about 2 years ago, we began a very significant overhaul in our culture in the sales department. And my leaders that were interviewing candidates would say, really, all I have to sell is myself, because I don't have the culture that I'm expecting to have if these people will join us. And so you got to sell yourself. You got to look the part, talk the part, and be the part, so that they are buying into. Again, these generations are very interested in why. They're very interested in who. They're less interested in the process to make the widget. They want to be part of something that's bigger than they can be on their own. And so selling who you are sets the culture tone for who they want to become and how they participate in your organization. But it doesn't happen in 6 weeks. It happens over an extended period of time. And they are watching your every move to be sure that what you said is true. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean you can't screw up, because you can. But they need to hear you say, I screwed up. That wasn't the best foot forward, and I want to change that, because transparency is important in keeping them engaged.
So I think there's two things. I think there's corporate culture. So the entity that you work for, it has a culture and an just kind of a being of itself. And then I think within teams or organizations, you can create culture. So, you know, I consider myself lucky that I work for a company that's got a great culture, because it's so diverse and it's so open and it's so embracing. I mean, we sell the technology that lets people connect around the world. Mm-hmm. It is what we do. We connect the world, right? So I'm lucky to kind of have that as the backdrop of the corporate culture. I work really hard in my organization to create a culture of ownership, a culture of collaboration, and that we make decisions together. To your point, Colleen, when we make the wrong one, I'm the first person to stand up and say, I own it. It happened on my watch. I screwed up. I need you guys to help me fix this. So I try to build a culture of a lot of transparency.
So working at Cisco,
yep.
How does that sort of, as far as just attracting talent, between a Cisco to a Facebook,
yep.
You know, how do you, or, you know, the culture at Facebook, everyone's playing ping pong, and everyone's sort of like, you know, having unlimited food, Google. So how, for a company like Cisco, how do you compete for the best talent compared to a Google or a Facebook?
So I think it's different in California than the rest of the world, because everybody, you know, in California, it's just like, there's a lot, people move around a lot in tech in California. I think one of the things that people really like about Cisco, and one of the things, and we use Facebook, we use Twitter, I mean, we recruit a very different way for the current generation. Where we're particularly successful is technologists. Because we do build cool stuff. I mean, we've got video, we've got, you know, satellites in space. I mean, so we recruit through that generation much more so around the possibilities of what they can help us invent.
Got it.
And we also share our technology. So we use every piece of technology that we build. So my house here in Austin is a node on the Cisco network. I have a telepresence screen in front of me. I can be, unfortunately, live, full size, ask my team. it's not so good, 24/7 with anybody around the globe. We can conference hundreds of rooms together, and we can digitally interact while we're jabbering, you know, and chatting on IM all at the same time. We can pass PowerPoints back and forth and mark them up. So a lot of what we do not only is using different venues to recruit into this generation, but more importantly, we show them that the stuff you build, we all use every single day. You can go, you know, use it to chat with your mom or chat with your friends. So I think that's a way we really do a lot of good recruiting with the technologists that are so important to our business.
You know,
we do, yes, we do have ping pong tables in Austin and in San Jose. Yes, we do.
I'm half Indian and I can play ping pong.
I'm really bad at it, but we have them.
You know, I think Nike is one of the best brands at, you know, attracting young talent, but there is also a tremendous legacy at the company. So it really is a group of people that have been there from 30 years to 3 months. And, you know, I think one of the keys is really having an ethos and an understanding of who your brand is and sharing that from the get-go, right? And so one of the things that I learned quickly when I went there, it was, you know, you have to study history to make history. And so everybody wants to make history, but sort of balancing that with an understanding that sometimes you have to study history to make history, it sort of gives everybody an equal seat at the table, you know, and that proved to be really, really helpful, even when somebody, a baby boomer, went in there after working for 20 years, you know. So you sort of come in as you're an advocate of the brand, you're a creator for that brand. We all have to understand it. So
what are the, sort of going down the road, what are the biggest, sort of the biggest thing that the millennials have taught you?
You know, I think they are incredibly optimistic. I think that is the one thing that they have taught me, right? That there's possibility and they will survive, whether it's the toughest economic time. I also feel that what some people often say is entitlement or, you know, sort of they're living at home longer, you know, that's all a part of their sort of respect for authority in some ways. And I think that there is a respect for authority and there is a desire and a curiosity to learn. And I think it's an incredible moment in time now with the boomers starting to retire at a quicker rate, that there's an opportunity to share and to teach. And I think my biggest learning is this generation is so much more curious and respectful than they're given credit for sometimes. Makes me mad when I read the paper about Gen Y a lot of times, and, you know, it's sometimes less than positive. I think, you know, it's up to us sort of to be more curious and understand them. So, yeah.
I would say be bold and be passionate. Because whatever it is, right, whether it's the pudding, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. Or whatever their passion is to give back in the community, they do everything with passion, 100% passion, which, you know, I have a lot of respect for, because, frankly, if you don't have passion for something, why would you spend time in your life doing it? Why would you put any energy towards it? So I really appreciate that, and I appreciate, you know, their desire to be bold, to kind of go big or go home. And I think many of us could use that, you know, keep that in the back of our heads, because at time we go, well, maybe I'll just not say anything in the meeting, or maybe I won't share my opinion. Well, they never think that. And so I think those are two great learnings that I constantly use as checkpoints for myself.
Debbie, I just want to add to that, because someone said, you know, life's too short to not do what you have passion for. And one of the young people that worked for me said, life's too long to not do what you have passion
That's
for,
true.
Which is true, right?
That's true.
Life is long and we should.
Way longer.
Yeah, so I learned that too.
I would say my biggest learning is that different is good. Different can be good, that we don't need to just rely on what is familiar and stick with what's always been. That really listening to new views and adjusting your policies and your standards to meet where this new generation is really, really good.
Great answers. how do you guys feel about sort of just the technological differences between sort of the boomers, the millennials, how fast kids can work these days and compared to the boomers? How does that sort of, you know, how do you guys feel about sort of your, you know, the different levels of speed and sort of learning these things? And is that worrisome to the boomers? And
I think their ability to multitask is a great advantage. You gotta spend a little more time getting them to focus on what you need to say, because they are texting and listening and walking and talking and chewing gum all at the same time. But I think once you can get their attention, their ability to do the job in multiple ways is really powerful. And you know, I remember when texting first came out and somebody said, "Oh, I texted my customer," and everybody in the building was like, "Oh, that's so unprofessional. You can't text." But
they limited the number of texts people could send.
It was craziness. But their ability to connect. I mean, texting is a very much more personal way than an email or certainly an in-person visit. And your ability to start communicating with your customers in that way, I think, is incredibly powerful. So I think it's all good.
Mm. I think it's one of the biggest impacts I've had in how all of us interact and communicate, because they use multiple modalities at once, right? Mm-hmm. We would have never thought of that. And I find it so interesting. So I'll use my husband as, you know, the most amazing example. He's like, "I'm never going to text. I'm not texting. Honey, I'm not texting." I'm like, "Okay, well, that's going to be your fastest way to reach me." But when the grandchildren, when our four grandsons said, "Grandpa Jim, you want to chat with us? Text, dude."
You have four grandchildren?
Yeah. So he now texts. So there's people in this room that know my husband. It's pretty amazing. He's 68. And so to watch him about 3 years ago, who go from "I'm never going to text" to "it's the only way I can talk to the grandsons, I'm texting." And he's like this texting machine. It's amazing. I think it's one of the most incredible, like, it came up right through the generations that I've seen, is the multimodality, any device, anytime, anywhere, with any kind of interconnect.
But I do think it's important still to help teach and understand the power of one-on-one conversation still, right? So I think that's our generation's gift back,
right,
is really to teach the power of the eye-to-eye, the face-to-face as well, you know, because I think we're all adopting to each other. That's how I think we can teach a little bit in that way too, and learn to text at the same time.
Okay, I think we're gonna open it up to questions.
There's mics, you guys.
Mics over there, so just we can just, I guess.
Yeah, there's a mic up in each aisle, so we can hear you guys.
Yeah, you could just stand up and ask questions. Hardest questions, please.
Can I go ahead?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm a cusp Gen X, Gen Y, and I manage a lot of baby boomers. Mm. So what I'm interested to know is, when the Gen X, Gen Y does move up, and we're now managing a multi-generational team, what advice do you have to us as we are moving at a faster pace because of the change and the shakeup, but then very quickly we're elevated into positions where we're managing people who have much more experience than us?
Yeah.
So go easy on us.
Great question.
We're trying.
Cut us some slack.
Right. Yeah, I think it's exactly what the reverse is, what the baby boomer is trying to do with the Gen X and Gen Y. It's just listen and learn and pay attention and respect. They do have more experience. That doesn't mean they're smarter or they're better, that you have the job because you have things that they don't have. But I think it's the appreciation for all is what really makes your team dynamic. And I would also say don't hang on to them if they can't roll with it. I mean, if they aren't going to change, it doesn't matter what age you are. If you're not going to do what needs to happen in today's world, you got to go. And so don't keep them on because they're the old guy and you feel bad for them.
But understand, yeah, totally, too, that with that experience, they're able to do things a lot quicker, right? That experience brings that sort of savviness, and take advantage of that savviness as well.
And I would say the last piece I would add is understand what influenced and shaped them.
Yeah.
Because they were shaped by very different events in their lives, very different influences. And so understand that, because I think it'll give you a little bit of insight into kind of like what makes them tick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great question.
Hi there. Good morning, ladies. Thank you so much for this panel discussion. It's really interesting. My question for you is about kind of recruitment and development of a younger generation. I work for a very large corporation. We do a lot of college recruiting. We're also a very traditional organization. Business dress every day, strict work hours. But we do a lot of great things that I feel like maybe are undervalued. You know, 401k matching, great health plan, profit sharing. We only promote from within, so no one ever gets hired and above you. So all these great things that I feel that value gets lost, and you know, in Austin especially, it's challenging. That's where we're based here. To compete with, you know, the ping pong tables and the kegerators and the things like that that I see every day in some of my clients' offices, you know, versus our very traditional operation. So I guess my question is, how do you sell the value of things that long-term have really good value for your life, right, you know, versus something more like short-term lifestyle, or are we just going about it completely incorrectly?
Well, that is a really tough question. So I'll just give you my perspective. So I think you might be going about it the wrong way. I do. I think there needs to be an evolution, because that evolution is happening. So we have to really understand that the things that we valued as for myself as a baby boomer, those aren't valued these days to the same extent. So I think, again, I would go back to that. How can you leverage the legacy and embrace the future, right? So it's not just protecting the core and protecting the legacy. It's, yeah, how do I protect it? But then how do I reach out and start to embrace? I think it's a little bit of, you know, make a little crack in that door and start to put feelers out there. I think we have to, you know, evolve or risk obsolescence at some point in time with a new generation. Yeah,
that's
my perspective.
Tough. I'm with Karen. You're in a tough situation, right? And I think that, you know, you'll have to find some crack or some opening. You know, do you want to be the change agent to help drive the change at your company and find one opening or one area that you know would appeal to the people that you're trying to hire and get the corporation to take a chance on one thing? And then maybe use some of the folks that you do recruit in to become the example of, well, look what happened. We did that, and look at the talent we got. Look at what they brought to the company. Oh, by the way, they're still contributing. They're a valuable part of our workforce. And then maybe you could mobilize the next thing and the next thing. Yeah. But I think you'll need to drive some level of change. Maybe you can find one thing and kind of use that as a platform.
You have to be transparent, too. You can't. Sometimes companies recruit like, hey, we're cool and we're flexible, but you're not yet, right? So you have to be honest of who you are, too, because they'll see through it and leave within months.
They'll get cranky.
Yeah, 401k doesn't matter to them as much as wearing jeans on Friday does.
Yeah.
Or Monday through Friday, which I struggle with that, so I'm with you on there. But but find something you can do. Blow a whistle when something cool happens, play music, have banana pudding, whatever it is that motivates your group. If you can't change the navy blue
free
suit
food,
rule.
Yeah. Free food wins. We're animals in the end, right?
And don't you think other people will like it, too? I mean, that's been my
experience.
Like
the rest of us.
Yeah.
And if it's the old guys at the top that are saying these are the rules and we can't change them, let them see the productivity that occurs when you free people up to be who they are.
Good luck.
Go do it.
Hello, my name is Claudia, and I work for Cisco. And I have a question. This morning, Verna used an analogy which I liked very much around inclusion and diversity. She said diversity is inviting someone to the party, and inclusion is that all of them dance together. And I think, you know, one thing is to be able to hire and, you know, have X, Y, and the different generations in one organization. But the other thing is, how do we make all of us dance and work together? And my question is around that. What, on the one hand, do we need each of us to do in order to ensure, because it's not only, you know, with older generation who needs to do something, but how do we all, you know, the younger and the older generation, what do we need to do to really dance together? And, you know, what type of teams have you seen who have been successful, and what are they doing to really, you know, work together and dance together, as Verna said?
Okay. I would say, back to understanding what everybody's value is and what everybody brings to the table. So you're not going to dance with somebody if you know the foxtrot and he knows the, what's the other thing? Disco. Yeah, the waltz. So you got to find somebody who is like, who can do what you do, complements what you do, makes you better than what you could do alone, and partner those folks up. And we have a mentor program where we take somebody who's more seasoned or more experienced with somebody who's anxious to learn and wants to be on the fast track. Great, let me hook you up, and together your dance is much more powerful than if you're going alone. You're going to have some guys that end up standing by the wall and no one's asking them to dance because they are not willing to either share or learn or change or grow. And that's okay too. I mean, you have to understand that as well.
So Claudia, I have a little bit of an advantage because Claudia's part of my team, and we're lucky to have her. I think one of the ways that we always try to drive it is to have a common vision, because somewhere in that vision of what the organization wants to be, to add value around, to deliver against, there's something that hopefully everybody can find a piece of that they say, that's what resonates with me, and that's what I want to be part of. And, Claudia led a lot of business for us in South America and has recently come back to the States to help lead that kind of approach for North and South America. And I think one of the biggest learnings that she's brought to the table to help us all dance together is that sometimes the big geography or the older generation can learn from the smaller geography and the up-and-coming people, because sometimes being smaller allows you to be more nimble and allows you to, like, think of things in a different way. And so I think bringing all those views to the table around a common vision is the best way I can think of to help people dance together.
Well, it's kind of like when you're at a party and you're like dancing like this, and then a guy tries to come and dance like the Running Man with you, and you're like, what are you doing? It's kind of like in the same context. It's like if you're dancing like this, the person has to approach you in the same way,
right?
And then you break in, and then you can like do the Running Man together, and be like, you teach the person how to do the Running Man. But I think if you're coming from all different walks of life, to really kind of approach the group in a way that is not so intense, mm-hmm. then I think you can break in, and then your spirit and your personality can come through.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, it's like the vision is the conductor, know?
Yeah.
I think that's really well said.
Good morning, ladies. Grace Lanny, I'm with Avindi. It's a startup accelerator in Austin for women. And I have the pleasure of taking 25 women twice a year through this program. It's 15
wow.
weeks.
Wow.
And I have women who went to college, graduated, mm-hmm. and hate what they learned to do and want to do something new, and usually it's start their own business.
Mm-hmm.
And I have women that have been through long careers, and now they finally feel permission to start their own thing that they're passionate about, and everything in between. And we've talked a lot today about what's different between these different generations. And I promise you, my kids are teenagers. Z is right behind.
Mm-hmm.
What's the same? I have my opinions about this, but what's the same between the boomers, the X's and the Y's, and how do you forge common ground there?
I've got a couple of thoughts. So mm-hmm. I think all generations want to make a difference. Everybody wants to make a difference and have an impact in some shape, form, or fashion. What you have impact on may be different, but everybody wants to make a difference and make an impact. I think everybody wants to show up and add value. Again, do it in different ways. The things that they think are value may be very different, but they want to show up and add value. And I think it's inherent in the human condition that we all actually would like to be happy. And so those are the ones that I see common across all of them.
Wonderful. I think we also share going through rites of passage, right? Different rites of passage. We just go through them differently, but we're all going through them. They may be a delay as far as, a rite of passage of buying a home may have changed now, or the amount, opting to get married. But I think we go through all these rites of passages. We just go through them differently.
Thank you.
I'm going to pass as we got a bunch of questions and not much time left.
That was a really great panel. So my question is, what's the limit to meeting the needs of the millennials? For example, we work with a lot of students, and we're cool because we're small. We're cool with working with students and having meetings on Sundays and evenings and, just kind of being really flexible. But in corporate America or bigger organizations, are there limitations?
There may be some corporate, kind of limitations, but I think each leader gets to make that choice, frankly, right? That's my husband. I meet on Sundays a lot,
right?
Sundays are good.
Sundays are good for me. They work well. I'm not on an airplane. So I think that each leader gets to make that call. And what they may need or not need to do in their business will probably be shaped by where their limits are. I do think some companies will have some set of guidelines, at least, that you have to operate within. But I say it's the choice of the leader of the team.
And that leader has to push forward for their team. The guidelines need to be pushed as far as they can in order to get your job done with the team you're trying to lead. And I think open communication with the folks above you or beside you that think you're crazy for meeting on Sundays, you got to explain to them, let me tell you about the group I'm leading. Let me tell you about the work we're doing. Mm-hmm. And that means we meet on Sundays, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. And you just have to keep pushing it. And it is exhausting at times, but it is the outcome on the back end far outweighs the travel to get there.
Hello, my name is Mumu. I'm from Dell Human Resources. I am a millennial myself, and I work in HR. So oftentimes, I will have friends or team members, actually similar age with me, will come and share with me their experiences, right? So I would say Dell is a fantastic place to champion multi-generation work philosophies and everything. But then occasionally you'll find the leaders that they don't have the toolkit or they don't have like the power to know how to make it happen, right? So you'll hear like complaints about, oh, my manager just told me that I'm horrible today because I arrived at 9:02, not 9 o'clock. And then you'll find managers, I don't believe they have a bad intention. They probably just don't have the right toolkit to help them understand how to make it happen, champion the same thing, right? So what are your experiences and practice in your company that you do to help the managers and leaders throughout the organization to recognize this, respect this, and embrace the multi-generation workplace? Thanks.
You know, I think that a lot of times we don't spend enough time learning peer-to-peer. And so there are always people that, you know, we look at tasks, you know, as a designer, there's somebody who has a mad skill in sketching or model making or, you know, and you'll go to that person to learn that crazy mad skill. We don't do that a lot of times with managing people. And so, you know, at Nike we did a lot of, you know, mentorship and coaching, you know, director to director, even at a higher level, and really understanding what somebody is really good at and having them reach out to those people for help. I think that's the best way, I from my experience, is that they learn by example. So I would say match them up with their peer group. And sometimes that takes a little bit of finessing because you don't want to think one manager is doing something better, you know, than another manager. But it's also the way Gen Y works as well, right? They sort of reach out and learn from the best. And yep. So similar.
I think that's a great approach. And the only other thing I would add is, you know, we're lucky in that we've got a pretty strong IND team at Cisco, and they've put together, frankly, a toolkit. Lots of research, lots of data. And lots of kind of pointers to where can you learn more. But I do think that a lot of leaders, one of their most common ways of learning is to pattern or adapt when they see what's successful with others. So I think you need the combination.
And there's a tremendous amount of information out there, books and video series. I mean, this topic is hot right now, and there are a lot of resources that they could use to catch up.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Hi, my name is Jennifer. I also work for Cisco under Debbie's organization, under Smart Services. So my question is that now that we're seeing, you know, the C-level executives and the management are all the baby boomers, the Gen Y, the Gen X, how does the generation, a millennia generation, then, since I feel like there's a large culture gap between those and us, how do we demonstrate our value to the other way around, right? As opposed to the C-level executives and the baby boomers trying to relate to the newer people, how do the newer people like us demonstrate our value to you? Because we have very different work styles, very different value systems, and, you know, showing up at 9:05 may be perfectly fine for me, but may seem like a bad, you know, record for in your mind because of your experiences. So what's your advice to the millennia, to the younger generation, to demonstrate value and translate our value to you?
I would say deliverables. I mean, having strong deliverables so that you can, you know, so you can show, hey, I did the work. I may have shown up at 9:05 a.m., but I got the job done. I did it really well. In my experience, you know, working with sort of just, you know, recent college graduates or students, a lot of times, you know, like punctuate this, you know, they send me stuff with punctuation errors, like all kinds of different things where they spell their, they do the their homonym incorrectly, which drives me absolutely bad.
Yep.
So, you know, it's like if you can do excellent work and have the deliverables be met in the best possible way, and you're thinking like an entrepreneur, like you're actually within your organization thinking how you can solve problems, and you're approaching the manager and saying, hey, I thought about what we need to do, and I've come up with a solution, and here it is, no spelling errors. I mean, that's like, that is, I think, huge.
Yeah. And I think, too, tell me why you're coming in at 9:05. If it's because you're just being disrespectful and you can't get your butt out of bed, that's very different than I volunteered at church this morning, I walked my dogs this morning, I had a great workout this morning. I mean, it's communication. Tell me what's going on in your life, and tell me that you're not just trying to break the rules and be defiant, but that you really are trying to fit in all the things that make you who you are. That's very different than me assuming you're just trying to be disrespectful.
Totally.
Sure. Yeah. And maybe that was a bad example of the being late thing, but
just the
value in general, because there's a very big cultural gap. Like, you know, what we see is okay and perfectly acceptable may not be, you know, in your opinion, and just trying to understand that to make sure that I'm demonstrating value in the ways that you recognize is definitely something that I think our generation struggles with a little more.
I think Mickey's example was perfect, really. It's like, whether we're multi-generational or not, we're in this case, we're working for the same company, and tangibility is tangibility. Mm-hmm. So tangible results, tangible examples, those are those commonalities that we have that will, you know, never get old or irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Hi, Larissa Santos. I work for Cisco Systems as well. And this isn't very far off from what was just asked, but I know personally I've been called a cheerleader. And, you know, Debbie, you were speaking earlier about passion. And Colleen, you spoke earlier about, you know, respect. And so, as was stated previously, sometimes that's misconstrued, right? That passion and tenacity, you know, that's a good thing, but a little bit of an overdose of it. And, oh, you're the cheerleader, or you're just a little too, you know, overzealous. So I'm kind of looking for some suggestions, perhaps, or thoughts on, again, bridging that gap of that culture of me. I think I come into a meeting and I'm diligently taking notes, but you might think I'm chatting with somebody on IM, whereas, you know, it's a respect thing. And, you know, how do you bridge that gap? And, you know, communicating, well, hey, I came into work at 9:30 because I went for an awesome run, which for me, that helps my productivity.
Right.
You know, but sometimes you don't really want to know my whole daily agenda, and that, you know, well, I'm taking the dog for a walk, and, you know, how do you sort of mitigate that?
Yeah, I don't think we want to hear it every day, for sure, but I think if
you're... Go running at 8 o'clock, not at 9 o'clock.
If your boss is saying, you know, it's 9 o'clock and you keep coming at 9:02, why do you keep coming at 9:02? That's when you have the conversation. Look, here's what really makes me embrace the day, or whatever it does for you, and helping them understand that it's not out of a spirit of breaking the rules. It's just truly who you are and how it works. Yeah, we don't want to hear it every day, but just setting the stage for that helps. I think the overzealous thing, I get criticized about that as well. I think you have to know your audience. You have to pay attention to the people around you. If you're in the blue suits and it's very corporate, it's probably not appropriate to come in all giggly and fun and happy. That's not what they want at that moment. So you got to read your audience, get your game face on, and some days it's that, and some days it's just serious and know your place and hold your natural style back.
But don't give it up.
Okay.
Definitely don't give it up.
So, don't give it up. That's who you are.
So you guys, we are out of time for questions. However, the other two just come up. We will be here to answer your questions. Yeah. I do want everyone, this is for my Little Things project. Everyone has this little sheet on there, this little postcard on their table. I want everyone to stand up. I'm going to just say this together. I'm going to videotape it. And it's going to be a powerful thing. Okay? Cool. So everyone stand up together and we're going to say this. Yeah, well, here, I got one for each of you. Oops. Yeah, extras.
Thank you. This was great.
We're reading all of it.
Okay, not the quick fact. Yeah. The quick fact is just for you guys to know. It starts with, I stand up for all women around the world. Okay, hold on.
Actually, that's a good idea.
Yeah, stand on the chair.
Okay.
Stand on the chair.
Okay.
glasses.
Yeah, then you get it. You okay?
Yeah, perfect.
Cool.
Okay, so it starts with, I stand up for all women around the world. And so it reads down and then left, right, down, and then you end with, I believe in a world where women are active members of society always. Okay? So, hold please. Okay, one, two, three, go.
I stand up for all women around the world. I know that my choices can make a difference. I have the power to directly improve not only my life, but other lives around the world. I can elevate the conversation to help women celebrate their unique and natural ability to create life. I am part of a solution to help girls stay in school so they can get the education they deserve. I believe in a world where women are active members of society always.
Yay! Thank you, guys.